It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. It's episode number 107, and in the second and third block, we visit about Mesoamerica. It's an LDS guide to Mesoamerica.
Mesoamerica, that being Central America?
Central and South America, and we talk about the lands of the Book of Mormon, where they might be.
All right.
Or where they might not be. Or where some people say they are, and others say, nope.
Nope.
And the history about other places, too, that have Mormon influence. So that's all coming up in the second and third block.
Very cool.
Yeah. Got an email.
Okay, let's hear it.
Steve.
Steve.
He's talking about the following. He says, he titles this email, Gospel Essentials Class Pet Peeves. Now, remember, recently we were talking about the different classes you can go to, Gospel Doctrine, and then you can go to Gospel Principles, and you can go to Gospel Essentials. Though I don't know the difference between essentials and principles off the top of my head, right?
We talked about this.
Between essentials and principles?
Oh, well.
Yeah. I think Gospel Essentials is like the beginning class. Right?
Okay.
Anyway, so he says, your last podcast was excellent, as usual. But if I may speak of a pet peeve of mine when it comes to the Gospel Essentials classes, one that I hoped that you would have addressed, but you didn't. First off, I really enjoyed the Gospel Essential class when I was first coming back to the church because that is where I refamiliarized myself with all the basic tenets of doctrine that I willingly set aside during my decades of rebelliousness.
Mm-hmm.
In that class, both the missionaries, both ward and full-time, and the teacher were very gentle in fellowshipping me back into the fold, even as I was at my glorious, obnoxious self. That class prepared me not only with the basic gospel without all the wild speculations, but in how to properly interact with other members. So my pet peeve, and then he capitalizes this.
Uh-oh.
Other members who come to the class with the only, and then in parentheses, seemingly purpose, but to show off their wisdom, knowledge, and testimonies to us noobs.
You're right.
How I hated it when I saw a well-established member crashing the class because, inevitably, they would open their mouth, try to, quote, teach, and bear their self-serving testimony that really did nothing but make me want to smack them something good.
Yeah, I agree.
Too rebellious? Oh, well. Because I was, and still am not, impressed with people whom, on their own accord, tried to help the teacher. Inevitably, all the filters would turn off in my brain, I would open my big mouth, and pretty much drive out what was left of the spirit from the room. The poor teacher.
That's
the poor missionaries, they just didn't know what to do with me. These days, I've very much calmed down, and I've moved over to the Gospel Doctrine class, so I would hope you would have said that if a person wants to get back to the basic doctrines of the church, to please feel free to attend the Gospel Essentials class, but please, 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 repeated three times in this email, don't show off. Until next time, Steve.
So Gospel Principles and Gospel Essentials,
same thing.
Just different names.
Okay.
So it depends on which ward you're in, what they call it. I was just looking it up. I was Googling it, and when you put Gospel Essentials, Gospel Principles comes up.
Oh, nice.
So some of the topics, we got Heavenly Father, Heavenly Family, Freedom to Choose, the Creation, the Holy Ghost, the Life of Christ,
oh,
the Atonement, Baptism. The one, I've taught this class before. I'm trying to, the one that I always like, I'm like, is like priesthood organization.
Why?
It's just
that's
like
important.
It's important, but it's just like something that's just like this is what it is. When you talk about faith, let's talk about your faith.
Mm-hmm.
There's more.
So you can't be like, let's talk about your priesthood organization.
Exactly.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Some
of these are just straightforward lessons.
Yeah.
Chastity. Oh no, that's charity. I don't. Maybe is there chastity?
Oh, there's got to be a.
There
law
is
a
lot of chastity.
There it is.
What's your law of chastity?
Well, this is okay.
Yeah. We won't get into that.
No, please not. Not the time nor the place.
Right. I was just thinking about the other night.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would not reference it like that and then leave it like that.
Okay. We did another podcast.
Yeah, we did another podcast the other night wherein we talked about similar things that were shared in episode, 68 or 70 or
the
something?
The sins of the BYU students.
Yeah, the BYU students.
And when we talked to those BYU students, this is episode,
I want to say 68 or 70.
Okay.
Yeah.
We talked to those students about the activities that happen down there.
The thing that I was really impressed with that has actually nothing to do with what you're talking about is we also talked about the SGA group at BYU.
And Straight
been,
Gay Alliance.
Yeah, they've been in the news again. That group is growing pretty big down at BYU.
Awesome.
Anyway.
There you go.
Other emails that came in.
Let's hear it.
This one on Facebook.
Okay.
From Julie Meldrum.
Okay.
Says, hey, I just wanted to thank you for sharing your mission experience with the world. This is episode 99 or 100, where I talk with the former companion of mine on my mission, and we talk to a lady that we converted.
Oh, okay.
Well, the spirit converts. We talked about the experience of finding her.
Yes, yes, yes.
Julie goes on, I'm sure that you hear this all the time, but having had a son serve a mission, my heart just wanted to help you make it out alive, and I'm so grateful that you did. I wish you great success in the future. Thank you for being a great example. Although addressed to me specifically, I'm sure that she thanks all of us for all of our examples.
All right.
These are just random things. I've gone through some emails recently, and I wanted to make sure, because I share, if not all,
yes,
95% of the emails that come in.
It's one of your goals.
This one is from Emily Johnson. This goes way back.
Okay.
She says, I've tested the theory about the password for internet access at church buildings being Capital Pioneer 47.
Yes, yes.
And so far the results are thus, she said. Sydney, Australia? Yes. Surfers Paradise, Australia? Yes.
All right.
Siem Reap, Cambodia? No internet. Hanoi, Vietnam? No internet.
Okay.
Hong Kong, Victoria Branch? Yes. Hong Kong Temple, patron housing? Yes.
All right.
So far.
But I find it no internet. That's kind of irrelevant.
No. Well, but it's cool to
there's
say
no that. Internet. There's. But she's kind of bragging about her travel log. Who is this girl? We need to get her on. We need to find out what she does. Let's just get her on the phone.
I can't remember. She emailed us and she told us what she was doing. She's in Asia somewhere right now, teaching. Emily, I'm sorry. Email us. She listens. She's a lifer, so she'll email us and say what she's doing.
Yeah, Emily, I'd like to know what you do, and if you've been in Asia, impacted what impact the typhoon has had.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I imagine there's a ripple effect around the entire
region. Well, yeah, certainly I would here, think even so. In the United States as well. But
yeah,
okay.
Another email.
Yeah, one more.
Okay,
two more.
Three more.
Maybe three more.
We could leave those for the other one.
Do you want to? Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Let me do these two short ones, and then we'll save the other two for later.
Okay. For another day.
This one is from Allison.
Allison.
She says, hey, I just wanted to say I just listened to the podcast with the early return missionaries, and I just wanted to say thank you.
You're welcome.
And that you did a really great job.
Yes.
Thank you for bringing up this very important issue. My husband still carries scars from the experiences related to the early return from mission, and just this week a close friend had her son postpone his mission because of anxiety. I told her and her son to listen. Even though I have left the church, I think that it is great what you are trying to do to change some of the damaging cultural aspects of the church. You're doing great work. Thank you.
Good.
So from a non-member, or a no longer member.
Oh, wait. Allison?
Yeah.
Oh, it's my cousin.
No, it's not that. Not that Allison.
Oh, okay. So to talk about this, we'll probably talk about this on Articles of News also, or have talked about it.
Previously on Articles of News.
That episode, we're hoping to find another copy of it. There's a software that we're pulling back the curtain, Richie.
Yeah, I know. Let's pull it back.
Yes. That compresses this dead space in the episode. The LDS psychiatrist was very soft-spoken.
Soft talker.
Soft-spoken that day. We didn't turn up his microphone enough, so a lot of it was cut out.
If we're really pulling back the curtain completely, it wasn't that the thing wasn't cranked on his end.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
He does, as Rob does sometimes, where he turns his face from the side of the microphone.
But there were lots of factors we weren't listening, and so the software decided to cut out half of it.
Not half. Report that I've got, it's about every third word.
Yeah.
Which must be cool.
It's
I
every,
haven't gone back and listened to it. I haven't gone back and listened to it.
Okay.
But
I've listened to it, and it's like, woo!
It's still doing what it needs to, though. People are liking it.
I know. That's great.
Imagine if they had the whole truth.
Yes.
The whole word. I don't know.
Yeah.
I went for it.
That podcast is not the most correct podcast.
This final one. This is from David.
David.
David Blog. Or Baylog.
Balrog.
He says, hello, all.
Hello.
I just thought it was about time to let you know how great I think your show is.
Wow, people think we're great. We get the we're not so great.
No.
Okay.
Occasionally we get the you guys suck.
Okay.
But that's not this guy.
Okay.
David says, I'm a Christian man from near Philadelphia that attends a non-denominational Christian church, but I'm a lifer of the cultural hall. Even though there are some things I don't understand, I feel as though I can believe about the Mormon faith. Okay, wait, hang on. Even though there are some things I don't understand or feel as though I can believe about the Mormon faith, there we go, I do believe that you have all the same beliefs as I do, and it's refreshing to hear your podcast and for me to learn more. Mostly, I'm happy to hear that you don't bash other religions to make yours better.
Well, right.
If I ever get to Utah, I'll bring you some tasty cakes and maybe some Lebanon bologna. Check you later, and thanks from one old lifer. David.
That's good. David, please email us back. You can email him back. How did he find the podcast if he's a
I think day job, but I'm not sure.
Okay. Very cool.
And to the point of emailing us, you can always email us, richie@theculturalhall.com, or you can go to theculturalhall.com and go to the contact us. It's always great to hear from you. We hope that you'll do it if you ever have questions or comments about anything.
And
guest suggestions.
Leave a rating on iTunes. We have 98 ratings.
Is there really now?
Yes. The last rating was left on October 25th.
I think I might have read that one.
Yeah, you probably did.
Okay.
Yes, you did. But the reason I'm saying this is
we should have 100 triple digits.
Yes. So if you are the 100th rating, we will mention it on the podcast and give you a pin.
A pen, okay.
A pen.
A Bic pen.
Yeah,
you just have to track us down to get it.
Yes.
And we will give you one. There's a prize.
If you ever want to be in the studio audience of the Cultural Hall.
There's a woman in Wyoming who we have talked to a couple of times about coming down, and she wants to. So
okay.
It's just a matter I've said, this is where we do it. This
Mondays.
Is the times that we do it. And
we'll disclose the location in our secret bunker.
With the American flag. There really is an American flag here.
Yes.
Our bunker.
It's in our bunker.
You can definitely come watch anytime that you'd like to.
You know what we should do? We should utilize that boom mic.
Yeah, okay.
For our studio audience so we can
Oh, there we
applause.
Go. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Woo-hoo.
So if you'd like to attend and then also...
Bring your own chair.
I'm planning now an event for next general conference.
Okay.
And I've planned a million things, so...
Or planned them in your head.
Yeah, planned them in my head. But I'm working with a guy who is amazing at getting stuff done, and I think that we're going to have something for next priesthood session in April in Provo.
Ooh.
Fingers crossed.
So, like, after priesthood session, have, like, an event?
Or maybe before.
Because you were wanting to do, like, the ice cream social.
Yes. It'd be something like that.
Okay.
So, there you go. All right. It's coming up in the second and third block. It's an LDS guide to Mesoamerica. It's episode 107. Of the Cultural Hall.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5000 5576 to book your shoot today.
It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. This is the second block here where we talk to Daniel Johnson, who is the author of the book An LDS Guide to Mesoamerica. And it's not just yourself though, right, Daniel? It's also Jared and Derek.
That's right. I'm the primary author, but they helped and contributed and were with me on all the trips that helped make up the book as well. So it was all a group effort.
So I want to read a little introduction to the book, and then I want to kind of talk to you about your experience and where you're coming from and all this. For people who don't know, An LDS Guide to Mesoamerica is an interesting look at the places that could tie into the Book of Mormon sites and history. The authors of this book have assembled this collection as a supplement to the guidebooks and tours that are already available. And they've done it in a way that it can be interesting to LDS travelers and also those who like to speculate on where Book of Mormon events may have occurred. It also points out ties of current archaeological finds to references in the Book of Mormon. So a pretty complete and comprehensive guide.
Daniel, where is your experience? Is this just something that you are passionate about, or is this an academic pursuit for you?
I guess that would be the former. It really was a labor of love for us, and it started because we just decided to take some take a trip, and the first one was to the Yucatan Peninsula, and got together and did it, and I'd been there before, so I said, hey, I can take you around and show you all these places, and we'll find some new places. Also, we kind of studied up on the sites, so we'd know where to go and what to look for. And then a year later, we went to Guatemala, southern Mexico, and Honduras. And as we were getting ready for it, and I was studying these places and finding out about them and just to see what had gone on there, we were thinking someone should write a sort of a site-by-site guide for the LDS tourist on these places we were going and have all the information there in a nice little just a nice concise format when you're at these sites. And no one had ever done that. No one had taken that approach. And so that's eventually what we did.
And is this your first kind of writing adventure?
Of this type, yeah, I would say so. Initially, the book was, the first draft of it was much larger than what ended up happening. I had to trim it down to get within the constraints of the book for our publisher, and ended up putting all the secondary information and more in a second book, which is an LDS guide to the Yucatan, and that's actually out as an ebook.
So you can get an actual physical book, the LDS Guide to Mesoamerica, and then the ebook is the Guide to the Yucatan.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about some of these places, because this is a pretty controversial, or, you know, people... It seems like it's pretty theoretical.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's controversial, but it certainly is theoretical, and that's why we kind of keep away from making any hard and fast declarations, like we found Zarahemla, or here's where, you know, Lehi's party landed. We don't really go that approach.
So how do you, I mean, go into that some more.
Okay. Well, it's been a fascinating topic for me, and ever since my mother joined the church whenever I was young, I have been interested in these topics and in ancient American cultures and so on.
So wait. How old were you when your mom joined the church?
I was 3.
Okay. So, you're talking super early, young life.
Yeah. And so I was kind of raised on this stuff and thought it was really interesting. And in more recent years, I'd read all the works by major U.S. authors and or LDS authors and scholars on Book of Mormon locations. And there are a number of them that kind of have their maps, and they place certain locations at very specific spots. These are guys that are all, you know, very very educated. They have degrees. You know, they work in this field, and they actually can't quite come to specifics on every point. So I'm not going to, you know, throw my hat in that ring. But really what I was trying to do was to see what similarities are there archaeologically. Keep away from things that are controversial or are hard to really get support for, and just go down with stuff that's just the basic things that non-LDS archaeologists agree on, stuff that's non-controversial at all, and see what kinds of things are similar. And then go to those sites, see those artifacts, read and study and write about the history of those sites, which is similar. And so the way the book is designed, for each site, each chapter is one site. You can kind of all get all the information together, but it's divided up into sections. So one section on that chapter will be the archaeological background of that site. One section will be our experiences and what happened to us and how we got there, what we did. And the other section is Book of Mormon comparisons. So things from that site, its history, its artifacts, any kind of writing or things that come from that site that are similar to Book of Mormon accounts. And so I just make comparisons and show the similarities there.
So share some of your experiences that you had then. Obviously, I don't want you to share the whole book, otherwise people won't purchase it. But, you know, share some of the experiences on some of the various sites that you had that made you go, yeah, okay, this is... What's the word? Strengthens testimony, or this reinforces the belief that I had.
Well, Right. Well, and that's, I mean, that's kind of what this is helpful for, although it's not really necessary. I mean, you hear the thing that, you know, the testimony about these things, knowing if the Book of Mormon is true, is not really an academic pursuit. It's very much a spiritual one. And it's a spiritual witness. And that's, I would say that after all this, that is true. But I mean, there are some interesting things. I mean, yeah, there are sites in the northern part of Guatemala, southern part of Yucatan Peninsula, that have fortifications built around them that mirror perfectly what Captain Moroni is described as having done during the wars between the Nephites and the Lamanites. So I've been to those fortifications where a large trench was dug out around the city, and then the dirt was piled up on the inside to make a wall. And archaeologists have even done sketches to sort of recreate it and showing, you know, palisades or wooden walls built on top of that. And that's just a perfect example of what Captain Moroni did. Of course, none of this stuff was known in 1830. No one really even knew that those types of cities were there at all. There was one site, a beautiful site in southern Yucatan Peninsula called Calakmul, which has large stone walls around it. And these are walls that are several times larger at some places than a person. And again, Book of Mormon mentions cities with walls, and just no one had known that these cities existed like this. I mean, permanent settlements of hundreds of thousands of people that lasted for centuries. Even among the Maya, and the Maya really aren't necessarily Nephites or Lamanites, or it's a later time period. But there were two major powers that were arch enemies and kind of fought each other over the centuries. So it's similar to things you read in the Book of Mormon. So just come up with similarities there. There was one site in Yucatan Peninsula where one of the ruling officers of the site was called the judge. And it was ruled by kind of a group of a judge, a military leader, and another person. And so it's interesting how, you know, we have the idea that after a certain time period, the Nephites had their rule by judges. And that was kind of an interesting thing to find as well. Mm-hmm. So it's just little things here and there that are very similar. And details that nothing like this was known again in 1830.
Let me ask you this. How can we feel speculate for me a little bit? How come we can't find something that definitely, that 100% links, you know, a Nephite settlement or a Nephite encampment or, you know what I'm saying, Nephite fortification to a specific place?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I mean, there might be some LDS authors and scholars who say that we can, and they have their reasons for doing so. One thing I would tell you is it's important to understand the state of archaeology. And in the Americas, it's fairly new compared to other parts of the world. So, I mean, it didn't really exist until, you know, the later 1800s. And most of what we know, when you read about Mayan sites, and in the past, you know, number of years, there's been getting a great amount of attention about Mayan culture. I think the year 2012 was part of that. Also, I actually think Mel Gibson's movie Apocalypto, for all of its controversy, it did actually increase interest in the culture, even among the Maya there themselves, which was a good thing. But most of the sites we know about, most of the history and the things that we're seeing come from what's called the Classic Period. And that started right around, a little bit after the close of the Book of Mormon. So around 400 A.D. and afterwards, that's when the Mayan dynasties of kings that we know today, that's when they started coming up. So that's the writings that we have, the monuments from them, are from like 500, 600, 700 A.D. That's when we really have a good understanding of what was happening in that area. The pre-classic period, which is what comes before that, and most of the Book of Mormon takes place in that period, we know much less about because less has survived from that period. A lot of it has been destroyed. I know of accounts of sites where invading forces came in and destroyed all the records of what was of the city that they conquered. That kind of thing happened over and over. And also among the Maya themselves, they would build up on previous sites. So you could go to a place like Tikal, and you see the giant pyramids there from around 700 and 800 A.D. But underneath them are structures that go back centuries before. So a lot of times this stuff was just built up upon and covered up by the later people. And also with these sites as well, just the nature of the jungles and much of the land in Mesoamerica and other parts of Mexico, if it gets abandoned, pretty soon the jungle just covers it up. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are sites still being discovered. Now it's satellite imagery is finding them. And all archaeologists agree that there's just so much out there that we haven't found yet. So that could be part of it.
What about, are there Mormon connections to some of these, more famous sites that we hear about, like Chichen Itza and, some of the bigger ones like that? Is there a Mormon connection?
When you say a Mormon connection, you mean like a Book of Mormon?
Yeah, like a Book of Mormon connection to some of these bigger places. Because I've heard speculated that, yeah, absolutely there is. And then I've also heard, no, there's no way it could possibly be. Where do you weigh in on that?
I don't make particular connections, but what I would say is you need to look at the time period, first of all. So with Chichen Itza, that was one of the later sites. So, you know, it didn't. What happened is around the end of the 8th century A.D., a little bit later, there was kind of a general collapse in the areas of Guatemala in what's known as the Mayan, the southern lowland. And when that collapse happens, and no one's sure exactly why it happened, but cities were abandoned and all kinds of terrible things were happening, people started moving north. And so a lot of the sites you see in the Yucatan Peninsula, like Chichen Itza, were founded much later. So as far as we know, Chichen Itza wasn't even there during the Book of Mormon time periods. Mm-hmm. Its founding was much, much later. And I think what you might find among the Maya culture is you might find similarities and you might find little traces. I don't know that you find things that are directly connected. But most Book of Mormon scholars, after kind of years of looking at this in a consensus, have picked Mesoamerica as the general location of Book of Mormon events, although they differ on the details. One major thing would be the River Sidon. There are two rivers. One is in Guatemala. It actually separates Guatemala from Mexico. Another one is kind of a bit over in Mexico itself. And those are one's called the Usumacinta, one's called the Grijalva. And those are basically the two major candidates for the River Sidon.
Mm-hmm.
And there are pretty firmly entrenched camps on which one is which.
How come? Why the controversy? Where are the two sides?
It's controversy. It's just that, you know, if you have 10 people in a room talking about something, you might get 10 different opinions. So it's kind of on how you make your internal map of the Book of Mormon. What's interesting is that the two rivers kind of start in a similar area in the Guatemalan highland. And so one, you know, heads out one direction, kind of going north. One goes a little bit northwest. And there are archaeological sites that are kind of associated with both of those. But what I'm saying is, you know, that's one thing where we can be pretty safe in saying that the Sidon was probably one of those, but there just hasn't been enough of a consensus to where everyone's, you know, jumped on just the one. But what you'd have to do is you'd have to look at sites that would be, that would have been built and actively occupied during Book of Mormon time periods.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, where were the sites that were occupied at, you know, 500 B.C., at 100 A.D.? And so you would look there. Most of the sites that people know and visit, you mentioned Chichen Itza, that's far later than that.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the sites that people don't know and visit, what they're looking at is from a time period completely afterwards. So the sites that would be during Book of Mormon time periods, in some cases are more remote, and especially in Guatemala, there are a lot of sites that are hard to get to. You have to pin it down to that. But also, even many of the sites that were later sites, like, for example, Tikal or Palenque, another very famous one, those were around. There were settlements there. There were things happening, say, in 600 B.C. or 500 B.C. But not much of that original structures and habitation settlement has survived. It's been covered up by later stuff. So the big thing, it is a bit of a shot in the dark because the Book of Mormon doesn't contain a whole lot of detail about this. But the big thing would be to try and get a map going based on geographic features. And I think there's just a lot of guesswork about that. There's speculation because the Book of Mormon details aren't that specific. So there's a general consensus, and for example, many people believe that the land of Nephi, or land of Lehi-Nephi, it's got a couple of names, was in the Guatemalan Highlands.
Okay.
And that seems to be a very, very good candidate for that. And there are settlements there that certainly date back to that time period. There's was a settlement called Camino Huyu, which is in modern-day Guatemala City. And a number of LDS authors have kind of picked that as being around the area for the city of Nephi. There's an LDS archaeologist named Richard Houck that believes that that doesn't quite meet all the definitions, and he, in the past few years, has been doing excavations at a place in the Guatemala Highlands called the Valley of Salama, and he believes that that is a better candidate for the city of Nephi. So this is an example of just kind of what's going on, and the similarities and the differences between the opinions out there in Book of Mormon geography.
I want to come back in the third block here and ask you a few more questions, and then I'll let you go. How does that sound?
Sure, here, whatever I can do for you.
All right, hang on.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
All right, so now we're back here in the third block, and I'm joined with Daniel Johnson, who is the author, one of the authors, the principal author. He's the main guy. The other guys helped out of an LDS guide to Mesoamerica and also an LDS guide to the Yucatan. Did I get that right?
Yes.
And we've been talking about, kind of all these speculative places. Here's what I want to know is are both of these books something that people can purchase, and then if they happen to head down to these areas, can find pretty easily, or are there like excursions or trips where people can go and see these not too often seen kind of ruins?
Well, there are people there are LDS tour groups that do that kind of thing, and so Joseph Allen has been one that has done that for a number of years, taking groups down there. There are also LDS travel agencies operating out of Utah that do that as well. Of course, there's an agency called the Cruise Lady that actually tried to schedule a couple of cruises to have me come on as a guest lecturer, and went to the to sites in the Yucatan Peninsula and in Honduras, and then I would accompany people along there. We never quite got enough people to have that happen, mm-hmm. but there are a number of people that do that. In my case, I've done that with close friends, just kind of gone down and done it informally. But then there's a fairly big business, I guess, of LDS tour guides that go down there and take people on those tours to see places. But the thing is, anyone could do it, and that's kind of what we had discovered. The first time I went to Mexico on a trip, I went with my wife in 1999, and we flew to the Yucatan Peninsula and just went around and seeing sites right there, and I thought, wow, this is easy to do. And if somebody wanted to do that, I think the Yucatan Peninsula is a great place to start.
Okay.
So I would recommend these books as kind of a companion to that. You know, if you never go, they're the next best thing. But if you do go, they're great to take as you go. We did try to make it useful in that regard. Tell you, here are the sites we went to, here's how we got there, here's what to look at when you're at the site. But the Yucatan Peninsula is a great place to go. It's easy to fly into to Cancun or to Merida. And then you can take buses all around. You can rent a car and drive all around. It's very safe. It's a great place for families. Mm-hmm. It's well set up for tourism because of Cancun. And so even if you don't speak Spanish, you can easily get around and go places. And it's well patrolled by police and government military forces. So again, it's very safe. It's a great place to go, and pretty much every place there, every archaeological site, is easy to get to. So that was my first place going. I thought, wow, this is, you know, it's easy. Just, I'd always read about these things and seen things on them and watched TV shows about it when I could. But to actually go down there and walk among these sites and to climb these buildings was just a fascinating experience. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't that much to it. Now for Guatemala, it's a little bit different. For Guatemala, I would recommend someone that speaks Spanish. I'm fluent in Spanish, and so that helps get around.
Sure.
And some of the sites are just a bit remote. I mean, there are some sites that we went to that are really hardly ever visited. Some that are so remote it takes hours getting on a boat through a river in the jungle to get there, and there's no one there. So you're just kind of wandering the site all by yourself. So there are places like that. The infrastructure seems to be less developed in Guatemala, so it's harder to get to some of these places. There are some that the best place to get there really is to hire a helicopter and fly in. That's about the best way. So, you know, it all depends on your level of adventure, I suppose. But the idea was to write these books as, you know, a companion to going there, to give you an extra level of understanding about these sites from a Book of Mormon perspective, but also just from a general archaeological perspective. And, or, you know, there's some people that like this kind of stuff, but will never get down there. Like I say, it's I guess, for the armchair explorer as well.
Are there a great deal of pictures within these books?
There are, actually, and that's kind of one thing that I wanted to do for it. I'm a teacher and a digital artist by trade, so I'm a very visual person. When I would read about things in Book of Mormon archaeology, I would want to go and see these things. Where is the artifact? I want to see it. What is it really like? What mm-hmm. is its provenance? What's its cultural context? And so we took a lot of pictures of these sites, and the book, An LDS Guide to Mesoamerica, is hardbound, it's printed in full color, and it's really designed to be very visually appealing. Lots of photos of the sites really give you an idea of what it's like when you're there. We also have a lot of graphics I've created to explain certain things. So, I thought it turned out very beautifully. I was pleased with that. And with An LDS Guide to the Yucatan, the same kind of thing, both those books are available for Kindle Fire as well from Amazon.com. But because of all the intense graphic formatting, that gets a little bit lost in that particular format. Mm-hmm. So if you don't get the actual physical book, or with like An LDS Guide to Mesoamerica, to the Yucatan, which is just an e-book at the moment, I would say one of the best ways to really get that full experience is you can purchase the books as PDFs from our publisher. Right. And then the format is completely kept over and nothing's lost.
Why do you feel like people should go and check these things out?
Well, it all depends. I guess I'm not saying everyone should, but one thing, my experience is it's a beautiful area. I love cultures and I love traveling, and there are wonderful people there. It's a beautiful area. The ancient Mayan culture is really fascinating, and there's a lot we still don't know. But these are just wonderful sites. Whether you look at it from a Book of Mormon perspective or not, it's just a fascinating part of history, ancient history, that has been kind of overlooked for a long time. In fact, European explorers and conquerors tried to destroy it. So it's a beautiful part of our ancient world that we should know more about and recognize, because it does have an impact today. With all the hoopla over 2012 and other things, you know, that interest was brought out again. So that's, in some ways, that's good. But, it's fascinating places to go. If you haven't done anything like this, it'll give you a great new perspective on things. And also, I mean, if this is all true, you know, if the Book of Mormon is correct, as we believe it is, being down there gives you, I think, just a kind of a better perspective on what it would have been like to live there in those times and why people did what they did. There are certain things where if you understand the climate and the topography of Guatemala or Mesoamerica, how it all fits together, you kind of understand why one thing happened, why people went here, why they wanted to go back there. So I think it just can give you a greater understanding of lots of things.
There are some people who would say that studying the history and some of this, especially of the church, can actually cause them to sort of question and, you know, maybe shake a testimony a little bit. Have you ever had that experience?
If I had my testimony shaken by looking into things, is that the question?
Yeah, by looking into the specifically these kind of archaeological or these, you know, these kind of things, not necessarily in general.
For myself, I would say no. I would say some things I find, I think, well, that's interesting, that's cool, it doesn't relate at all. And some things I find and I say, you know, wow, that's interesting, and it looks like it does support something, it looks like it does relate. So I don't think there's anything out there that's going to damage a testimony. I mean, as I've looked into this, I've found interesting things that not many people know about. In an LDS Guide to the Yucatan, I have a section there on ancient horses, horse remains that have been found in Mexico, and the history of that, what we do know about that, and also the latest scientific studies and excavations that shed more light on that. And that actually, horses have always been seen by people as a bit of a controversy and perhaps an anachronism.
Mm-hmm.
But with the stuff that I've found, that's actually taking us closer and closer to the idea of finding evidence for horses. We know they were there. We know they were about the same as modern horses. Now the time period is coming closer and closer. So things like that, I think, those could help a testimony that is wavering. But I mean, proving a negative is close to impossible, so I haven't found anything that disproves the Book of Mormon. I found lots of cool things that don't seem to relate, and I found many things that seem to support it. But, you know, for some people, these are ancient questions, and they have a drive to look into them, and some people don't as much. So perhaps it depends on the person, but I would say there's no problem. You kind of have to know, you know, what to look for, and we're not going to find a gold plate written in Reformed Egyptian that says "Welcome to Zarahemla," signed, you know, King Benjamin. You know, if you're looking for that, although
that would be cool, huh?
That would be cool. There's no doubt about it. But if you're looking for that and that's all that you need, that you have to find, you'll be disappointed. But if you have a more realistic expectation of things, and maybe there's a divine reason that we haven't found, you know, the proof that answers things without any question. I mean, Alma himself in Book of Mormon says that God wants first that we should believe, and that's where we need to start off. So it's still a matter of faith. But for me, looking into it has really only helped out my faith in these things and give me a greater understanding. I had one little account here. A person who was a seminary teacher of mine from years ago, he has a great interest in these things. He's worked for the church, and he's done a lot of travel down there and knows quite a lot. He really enjoys the books, and he said that one of his sons had kind of left the church and kind of had gone away.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he liked the way that these books were written because it wasn't really knocking people over the head and trying to pound in, here it is, here it's proof. It's very kind of objective and sort of neutral. And he said that he liked that approach, and that's something that he could share with his son, and his son would appreciate that, whereas other people who say, you know, I know it's true, here's the proof, here's why.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of goes a bit beyond the scope. He said, so he felt that our approach was enough to where it could reach a lot of people. And, you know, there might be interesting things in there for people who aren't LDS as well. But the whole point was just to share our experiences and share things that we found and that I found in my research. And I've uncovered quite a few interesting things that are surprising to me. That I felt should be talked about. A lot of people are arguing back and forth about proof of the Book of Mormon and archaeology. They're arguing old topics that aren't even really applicable anymore. And there's so much other stuff that isn't being talked about. I just wanted to pose these questions and let people know and then have the discussion continue. And that's really what I'm trying to do here.
What's the most surprising thing that you've found?
I've been asked that before, surprising. I guess perhaps it would be the evidence for ancient horses. There were excavations done in a cave that we visited in the Yucatan Peninsula. It's called the Caves of Lultun. And there were expeditions or excavations done there, stratigraphic ones into the ground that recovered bones of ancient animals, and it was all very well cataloged. And what they were finding is horse remains in places where they shouldn't be.
What do you mean by should? What do you mean by shouldn't be?
Well, you know, well, first of all, the general story a long time ago was there weren't any horses here before the Spanish arrived.
Yeah, Book of Mormon can't be true. There weren't horses.
Exactly. In fact, I mean, you know, Joseph Smith and Oliver Cowdery and whoever made it up should have known that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then what we find is that horse remains and fossils had been found and weren't recognized until, I think, 1848. Okay, yes, there were ancient horses here, but they died out at the end of the last ice age, 10,000s, you know, B.C. or whatever. And then more recent finds, and I've looked at this and written about it, have shown horse DNA taking us to, like, 6,000 years ago. Well, so now we're getting even closer. So there's kind of a certain scientific paradigm that we've got the answer and that's it. And when you find something that's anomalous, like, for example, in the 1800s, when horse fossils and horse remains were found in the U.S., they were in some Thomas Jefferson collected fossils. They were in his collection.
Hmm.
But because horses weren't supposed to be here, no one talked about them. And it wasn't until 1848 that the first scientific papers were written saying, okay, yes, there were horses here. That's what I'm saying about finding horses where they're not supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in these stratigraphic excavations in the caves of Lultun in the Yucatan Peninsula, the scientists were finding horse remains in strata that was far too early. They shouldn't have been there. They were finding horse remains mixed in with pottery fragments. And kind of completely throwing a monkey wrench into what we thought had been the history of this type of thing. So I read a paper in Spanish on that, and I've actually created, I haven't seen anyone else that has done this, but I've created a chart, a graphic showing the levels from the excavations and what was found where, based on the descriptions given in this scientific paper. And that's in a chapter on the caves of Lultun in the Yucatan, in An LDS Guide to the Yucatan. So even in the scientific paper, the person who wrote it up saying something happened here which is hard to explain.
Hmm.
And so they're finding horse remains in places where they thought they shouldn't be. And he said, you know, it may be that horses survived until, you know, much later than we thought. So that's the kind of thing. And like I say, horses are still brought up today by people who are critics of the Book of Mormon as proof that it's not true.
Sure.
And I also think among members, when they really start thinking about that, that's something that is testimony shaking. I've seen people writing stuff about about that, and that's okay. Now I know it can't be true, and so if that's not true, nothing else is true, that kind of thing. So
So spread the word. There were horses.
There were horses. You know, the real question is, there are horses in the Yucatan Peninsula. How'd they get there? They weren't, that's an isolated spot. They couldn't be just there. They would have had to have been in ancient Guatemala and southern Mexico and all over. So the horse is what is interesting, and I've got a whole lot of information about that. There's even a breed of horse that some horse experts don't really know its origin, as far as, you know, connecting it to, you know, breeds and lines that can be traced back to European ancestors. And there's even some theory that perhaps this was a horse that was in the Americas all along, but just was never discovered. So, I mean, there are things like that. Elder Dallin H. Oaks once said something, I'm paraphrasing, you know, don't give up on what you know for what you don't know. So there's a lot of stuff we don't know about the Book of Mormon, and there's stuff that we'll always have to take on faith.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as the critics poke us about that's kind of the case. We'll always have to have some amount of faith to accept it. But I think these things might let us know that our faith is not entirely groundless, but there might be something there. And so after all that we've done, I mean, you can have a perfectly strong testimony of the Book of Mormon without taking any of this into account. But I would say it's just given us a greater understanding of how things might have happened, and certainly has increased the faith or strengthened it, or at least given a way to respond to the questions. And the questions are valid. The doubts about the Book of Mormon, they are valid. Elder Oaks also said that giving no answer is better than giving a bad answer.
Yes.
So we don't want to answer issues about the Book of Mormon with bad archaeology or outdated explanations or things that just don't make sense. And so what I'm trying to do with these books is just give the latest information out there. And I've stayed away from stuff that's that is controversial. I've stayed away from stuff that sounds interesting, could be true, but I can't document it. And I've really kept with just non-LDS experts so that I can feel pretty secure in the statements I'm making.
What's next?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I mean, the fact that these two books got published and they've been well-received, that's enough for me. I mean, I'm being an author isn't my main thing. So what's next? I don't know. The problem is life has kind of intervened. And so I've got...
Life always gets in the way, huh?
Exactly, yes. And so I've got... you know, kids to raise and family to think about and bills to pay and just kind of the usual things of life. So
does the family kind of geek out with you a little bit about it, or is this dad's thing?
It's mainly dad's thing, I would say. You know, I tell my girls, I say, if you learn Spanish, I'll take you down to Mexico. So I think that's kind of cool. My kids are all fairly young,
mm-hmm.
but. Yeah, it's mainly kind of been my thing, but you know, I keep looking into things and trying to see the issues. Just recently, I wrote something on my blog about someone had talked about skulls of red-haired giants found in a cave near Winnemucca,
mm-hmm.
and that their remains are in a museum in Winnemucca. So I thought, well, hey, you know, when I'm heading back to California from Utah, I drive to Winnemucca, so I stopped and I went to that museum. And spoke to the curators there, and you find out the truth about the whole thing. So I've got something written about that. So
where can we find that?
Well, I have a blog, and the blog tells about the books and any firesides and presentations I'm giving. Has contact info. It also has links to PDFs that I'm writing. And in fact, I just finished up one on directions in the Book of Mormon, and that'll probably be on there soon. It also, so you can download papers I've written about metal plates, about metals and gold, about horses, about some of these things as free PDF downloads from the site, and see this latest article that I was talking about, and that is at ldsguide.blogspot.com.
ldsguide.blogspot.com. Okay.
Yeah, and for people that want to get in touch with me or want more info about the books or where to get them or just to see some of the stuff I'm doing, that's a good place to go.
ldsguide.blogspot.com. Okay. Well, there's a couple of questions that we ask everyone before we let them go, so I'll ask them of you. First of all, do you have a calling in your ward right now?
I guess unofficially, I'm the, yes, I'm the Fourth Sunday Teachings for Our Times teacher in our Elders Quorum.
Okay.
That's kind of unofficial, so I'm, beside that, I was released from a calling, more of a major calling fairly recently.
What was it? Come on.
Elders Quorum president.
Okay. So you're exhausted.
yeah, although I always feel that I could have done more than I should have. I could have been more exhausted. But, yeah, before that, my very favorite calling of all was gospel doctrine teacher, and I held that for quite a few years.
If you could pick a calling, either one that exists or invent one, what would you pick for yourself?
Well, I guess I just did that. So for me, the calling that I would choose, if, you know, if I ran the church, it would be gospel doctrine teacher. For me, it's all the fun and none of the responsibility. So I did that in our ward. I did that in our ward for 6 years or more, and... that was my favorite calling of all. And I still, from time to time, sub for the gospel doctrine teachers if they're not going to be there.
Do you have a favorite? You know, there's the four different sections. Do you have a favorite one?
Four different sections.
With
as far
gospel
as...
doctrine, because it's Old Testament, New Testament, Doctrine and Covenants, or Book of Mormon. Do you have a favorite one?
That's a tough one. I might say Book of Mormon, but the New Testament would be really close as well. I love teaching New Testaments. So that's a tough one. But yeah, that's about as close as I can get there. New Testament or Book of Mormon are probably closely tied or something like that.
And then finally, what is your favorite part of your faith?
Favorite part of my faith. One thing I've been doing over the past couple of years, I've been in a lot of radio shows and podcasts and things like that, but things which are more like paranormal themed and spirituality themed. And I go on there and just say, hey, would you like to know a Mormon perspective on these things? And most people think, yeah, we've never heard that before. So I think perhaps one of my favorite things is just that there are so many answers that we do have. Whether they're true or not, and people can take that up among themselves, but there are so many things that people are wondering about, and topics have come up in more recent years, and they even delve into strange topics of you know, paranormal, you know, ghosts and spirits, and even things like life in other worlds, UFOs, things like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that much of Christianity for a long part of its history has been very kind of closed off and sort of isolated from all these things and would reject scientific advancements. One thing I love about our faith is just is there are answers. These things are, you know, tied together. That these things that people are still wondering about and they're not really finding answers in traditional religious avenues and they're going to other places, we have answers for that we've had all along. And I wonder if we don't recognize just how beautiful those answers are or how special it is that we have those, how lucky we are. When my mother found the church, she just looked up a number in the phone book and called to find out when services were and just asked whoever answered the phone, oh, what about this? A question she'd always had. And the guy had an answer right away. Oh, really? What about this? He had an answer right away. And she couldn't believe that someone just had these answers about these things that she and her Christian faith had always been wondering about, and her ministers never had a solid answer. Hmm. So I think just the fact that we have lots of answers and things for me really tie together quite well. And I love sharing those. And what I found is that people who aren't that familiar with us are fascinated to hear them. Now, whether you think they're true or not, again, that's another issue. But the thing is, I think the answers are beautiful, and I think that they're very helpful.
Well, that's it. We hope that the show will nourish and strengthen your body, and that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row. We read.